Hello, welcome to My Opie Defender Childhood. This week we watched The Lost Boys, a Joel Schumacher vampire movie starring Kiefer Sutherland, Jason Patrick, both Coreys, and I'm going to get this wrong again. I always get it wrong. Edward Herrmann. Wow. This movie we riffed for Cineprov, and therefore I thought it would be appropriate for an episode as a nice little crossover. But also, it's just, it's something. It's as Joel Schumacher-y as Joel Schumacher movies get. It's silly, it's over the top. Half of it looks like a 1980s music video. And frankly, it's a lot of stupid fun. If you are not following us on Facebook, I don't know why not. We have a Facebook group and a Facebook page. If you are on Twitter, we're on Twitter. Hey, look at that. Almost everything is Myopia Podcast, so you should be able to find us. We are on Letterboxd as well, and we're on Instagram. And then finally, if you want to help us out financially, check out the Patreon page with Here Be Tigers, Geekly Oddcast, and us. We are trying to grow, so it'd help us if you could share us with your friends and family and get their support on board. And again, if you're here from Cineprov, thanks for joining us. I appreciate your support. And, well, thanks. Welcome to My Opie Defender Childhood. This week, we're following up a Cineprov riff, and we're doing Lost Boys, Joel Schumacher's 1980, I didn't bother.
87, I think.
There you go. Vampire movie starring Corey, and Corey. I'm Nick Hoffman, host of My Opie Defender Childhood, and on panel we've got...
Matthew W. Quinn, who's got a new book out, Battle for the Wastelands. You think you'd escape me, you know, pimping myself? No, you won't.
He is a pimp. And...
Hello, this is Daniel, and speaking of pimping, I have a feeling Joel Schumacher took a few of those oiled-up singers home.
So we are doing, well, I already mentioned it's a two-Corey movie. It's a Kiefer Sutherland movie. It is a...
Jamie Gertz movie.
A Jamie Gertz movie. An Edward Herrmann movie, which I don't know if that appeals to anyone.
And who's the John Hughes-looking ad executive guy that's trying to hit on a... Oh, it's a Diane Wiest movie. Let's mention
it's
her.
It's a Diane Wiest movie. That's Edward Herrmann.
Okay.
He's the dad from Richie Rich.
Oh, yeah.
And he's also the narrator that, before he died like 3 years ago, 4 years ago, that narrated effectively everything Ken Burns did. So if you watch Civil War, if you've watched, I think he died before Vietnam came out, but he did the Roosevelts. He's the narrator for the History Channel, for PBS, because he just has that voice.
So if you ever listen to that narration, keep in mind, ladies and gentlemen, he looks like the real-life Gil from The Simpsons.
Let's back this way, way up. This is a Joel Schumacher movie down to the bat nipples. This is the gayest vampire movie we've done since Interview with a Vampire. The other vampire movie.
There's a prolonged sequence involving a dude with his shirt off, oiled up, playing the saxophone.
Yes.
He is sex playing that saxophone. He has it in one hand, he blasts out four notes, and then runs around barely lubed up.
I'm pretty sure there are several scenes of Corey Haim in a dress. I'm just saying.
A man wearing a nightgown. I haven't seen that since Christmas Carol.
I don't know, Reagan's America?
Well, let's be specific here. Corey Feldman, that's Feldman or is that Haim?
Haim's the younger brother. Feldman's the one at the comic store that's like fancies himself a vampire hunter.
Yeah, so he's the one who looks like bad Emilio Estevez in
yes.
this movie. Yeah, okay. Specifically Emilio Estevez from, is it?
Probably Red.
I'm thinking Maximum Overdrive.
With
the Rambo headband on.
Yes, okay.
It's been a while since I've done the summary because I'm usually hosting, but... again, if you missed it, we riffed this on Cineprom, and I would say...
It was magical.
Oh, thank you. I was going to say it was pretty good. Essentially, after a cold open on a carnival where a bunch of winger backup singers is being harassed on the gangway of... Well, it's a boardwalk, right? On a merry-go-round.
All
right.
Under the boardwalk.
If I can jump in real quick, if everybody saw the movie Us that came out, now last year, since this is the first recording we're doing in 2020.
Woo!
That's the same boardwalk that that movie opens on, where underneath is that lab where all the clone things are.
Yeah, sure.
And I think, if I remember correctly, they even say, I think they're filming a movie over by that carousel. It's this movie.
Yeah.
That's what they're referencing.
Yeah.
Under the boardwalk. Something, something, something.
The lyrics are, in fact, Out of the Sun.
Okay.
That's some we'll be having beer. Some fun.
Which they do, but it's in a hotel under the boardwalk. Spoilers.
Moving on. after a, I guess, our cold open in which some rowdy teens get kicked out the boardwalk by, you know, Paul Blart Mall Cop, and then he gets his body torn away with the door of his car, we get smash cut to one of the various Coreys and Patrick.
Jason Patrick.
Jason Patrick, thank you. Who eventually does everything, right? He was like always a B-class action star. I think he was on the X-Files for a bit.
I confuse him and the guy who played Malfoy's dad, because I think they're both Jason Patrick.
That's Jason Isaac.
Yes. Oh, well,
and he's much more impressive.
Yes, I know he is, but I couldn't think of anything Jason Patrick did off the top of my head.
I swear he was in something else, but his official file photo is Lost Boys.
Oh, boy.
Oh, I know what he is. Did we do this movie already? Speed 2. He's the guy who replaced
Speed. He was the Keanu replacement.
He's
Speed.
The Keanu
oh
replacement.
My God.
That's the one thing. He's also in Sleepers, which is fine.
Wow.
Yeah, it's not good. And the 2000s was filled with mediocrity, so good for you.
Still better probably than the two Coreys in the same time period.
I mean, the Feld dog is acting still. He's not worth anything anymore. So let's talk about this.
Sick Transit Gloria Mundi.
Okay.
The glory of the world is fleeting.
Okay.
You want to just keep digging that hole you're burying yourself
yeah,
in?
Yeah, I can do that some more if you'd like.
No, please.
I'm just saying it's so many people, you just never hear from them again.
Memories. Then we cut smash cut to Corey and Jason Patrick and Diane Weiss
yes.
Arriving at her father's house, who her father immediately says, you know, divorce usually improves the situation of most people.
Now, what's that Bruce Stern?
It was not Bruce Dern. It's his darn shame.
I just lost money on that.
A crotchety old man who apparently hasn't had guests over since his wife died 7 years before. But don't worry, he's stuffing everything in the county from rabbits to the widow Miss Johnson. His name is Bernard Hughes. He's the hipty-dipty grandfather who has weed plants growing above the windows in the kitchen. And he has his knee high and his... What was it, like peanut butter crunchers? And
something
like
he had like double chocolate Oreos or something and on the second shelf of the fridge. That was his shelf.
That's right. And by the way, you know this actor because he's also in Tron. He's Dr. Gibbs, the one on the outside.
Oh, yeah.
And he's also the old doctor from Doc Hollywood.
I've never seen Doc Hollywood. I have seen Tron.
I'll admit to seeing Doc Hollywood because I was a bit of a Michael J. Fox head back in the day.
Mm.
Anyway, regardless, after a weird sweaty saxophone concert, they end up chasing a girl in kind of a white corset top, and we get introduced to the world of vampires,
yep.
Effectively. That's this movie.
And yeah, Big Brother's really stalkery in that scene.
And they turn Michael, that's his name, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
They turn Michael into a, well, not a full vampire, but they start the process of turning him by making him drink Kiefer Sutherland's blood by pretending it's wine. It makes a little more sense in context, but basically he won't become an actual vampire until his first kill.
Right. So we will get into all of this because we have to. But first, we just have to talk about how this movie looks. My God, what is this movie about? For those of you who haven't seen this movie, Daniel, could you explain what it feels like?
Like it's 1989. You're still awake at 2 a.m. You've got MTV on, muted, and you're popping Quaaludes.
Like, for example, the brother, Jason Patrick's character, Michael, looks kind of, sort of, a little bit like Jim Morrison. And so they highlight that by playing not only one cover of a Doors song by Echo and the Bunnymen, but in the magical basement hotel palace that Matt was already alluding to, there's a giant Jim Morrison poster.
Yeah.
Which then during a drug scene after drinking Kiefer Sutherland's blood, I hope you're keeping up with all of this, they keep doing the 1980s music video thing where his face would fade into another face, which would fade into Jamie Gertz's face, who at the time had long, curly brown hair, just like Jim Morrison. It's weird, man.
And this movie is like an 80s music video. It's 2 hours long.
Actually, right during that scene, I swear, if you listen real low in the mix, you can hear this piano start playing and this... Castrato going, turn around.
It looks like the only person who got out of this alive is the writer who also wrote for Golden Girls. This seems like it would be a terrible story And I'm not even going to look into her.
Well, to be fair, Joel Schumacher got out of this kind of alive for a little bit in the fact that he got to keep working, but...
Well, and the two Coreys, this is one of, what, three movies they did together?
In the 80s, I think. I looked it up earlier, and I think they did some stuff in the 90s, but by that point, nobody cared.
Drive something, driver's...
License to Drive.
License to Drive.
Dream a Little Dream, I think, was the other
one. Yeah.
And Feldman had much more of a career. And if you haven't looked at his... Well, don't look at him now, but look at him in the 80s. He's in everything. Like, it was one of these things where I'm like, oh, yeah, the two Coreys, yada, yada, yada. I was born in 85, guys, and that makes me, what, 35 this year? I don't care. Who cares? But when you're 35, I was not aware of Corey Mania as it existed in the 80s. You know, I guess stay tuned. In 2 weeks, we're going to do Goonies, which is a Corey movie, and we've already done Gremlins, which is a Corey movie, the other Corey movie, and like...
Have we done The Fox and the Hound? That's a Corey movie.
That is a Corey movie. We've done the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and didn't he voice Donatello?
He did.
Yeah, there you go. Reaganomics! Like, this kid is such a little prick. I don't...
Now, my personal favorite thing that he's ever done is, and you can find this on YouTube, I think Howard Stern in the early 90s had him on one of the TV shows that he was trying to host, and, Corey Feldman debuted a new song that he had written and produced.
Oh, God.
And, oh, dear Lord, it is one of the most magical, absurd things you'll ever see.
Was he coked out? Because that was his story, wasn't it?
Well, I think it was both their stories. I don't know what was going on. After this, I'll show you the video. Please.
We'll put it on the Facebook. We'll remember to do it. You're editing this episode. You'll remember to do it. Where do we go from here?
Well, here's the weird thing, and this is another bit of trivia, because we were kind of talking about this earlier, that Phantom movie that Joel Schumacher did, that's terrible.
Phantom of the Opera.
Right.
Not Phantoms. He did not direct Phantoms?
No.
Or The Phantom. The Alec Baldwin? No, that's The Spirit. No, that is The Phantom.
Yeah, Phantom's Billy Zane, I think.
Billy Zane. Oh. Shadow is Alec Baldwin.
Yes, thank you.
And I think those both should be stay tuned.
They are.
So that movie was in development hell for forever, right?
Phantom of the Opera?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because it kept going through cast members, and everybody kept dropping out. But Schumacher was hired to be the director of that from the beginning. And it was based off the use of music in this movie.
No shit.
Apparently, yes.
But that movie came out 17 years after this?
Yeah.
Oh, God damn. I mean, and that's 2004. That's after he did Batman and Robin and Batman Forever.
Yes. And, well, he had just done Phone Booth, which is actually pretty good.
Which is fine. Phone Booth is fine. Not as many overt homosexual, like, everything. I mean, and you know what? You want to make a gay movie, you make a gay movie. This is not a gay movie. This is a very straight movie.
Well, it's a gay panic movie. Because
it is.
The whole thing is about how how Keith Sutherland's trying to seduce Jason Patrick, right?
Kinda. And Michael is going to kiss his brother. Because they keep talking, like, inches away from each other at, like, weird Dutch angles. It's very weird.
There's some subtext here.
And water is also wet.
Yeah.
Also, let's not forget, during the sex scene with Jason Patrick and Jamie Gertz, it cuts to shots of clouds.
And then he's the only one who's at all naked, which is fine. I mean, I get, like, women are over-objectified in sex scenes. But, like, he is glistening. They moisten him before every shot. It is something. So we should get into these vampires a little bit. None of them have any characters except for...
Kiefer Sutherland.
Kiefer Sutherland, who is the head... of this little clique, kind of. We turn out it's not.
One of them is Alex Winter, who, as you might remember, is also a Bill S. Preston.
Yeah, he's in Bill and Ted, who, you know, thankfully they're coming back this year.
So with those blonde mullets, it's very hard to tell any of them apart, except for Kiefer Sutherland, because he's so distinctive. I mean, some of them weren't even sure if they were men or women.
I think that's part of the point. You're talking about subtext.
Very effeminate male characters, again, except for David. Listed at the very bottom, Marco, who was Alexander Winter. In this movie, who has his normal kind of curly, fluffy blonde hair and then extensions that go down to the small of his back. It's the worst white guy mullet I've ever seen.
Sounds like the biggest one.
It's not how mullets work, man. You got to go for the full Hall & Oates, where it's just kind of a curve, or a mid-century Seinfeld, if you will, where it's just kind of curly. Meanwhile, Diane Wiest has her normal pixie cut, which is great.
Well, this was a few years before she joined the Avon Corporation and became the Avon lady that area in Florida, wherever that was.
That's right. Meanwhile, apparently all these people have names, including Dwayne and Paul. But the other two groups we have to talk about is there's a sexy lady. Her name is Star. And Michael goes, huh. And she goes, what? Star's funny because I had hippie parents and I was almost Moonbeam.
Moonbeam.
Jason Patrick might be the worst actor to helm a movie ever. He's atrocious. Now, Kiefer Sutherland is acting sexy circles around him. And guess what? He does look great.
Kiefer Sutherland is clearly having fun.
Kiefer Sutherland is not only doing a good job, but he looks good in this movie. And who knew in 20 short years he'd be rescuing the president, and then 10 years after that he'd be the president.
For all of 2 seasons.
Yeah, before they canceled. The West Wing got 8 years, and he was a Democrat. Yet one Republican president he's canceled after two. Who'd have thunk it?
He was a Republican in that show?
I thought he was.
He may have been.
Whatever. I couldn't be bothered.
I don't think they made a big deal out of his political affiliation.
Well, if I recall correctly, the president was killed in the State of the Union.
Everyone was killed in the State of the Union, including the Congress and the Supreme Court.
Are we talking about 24 or Designated Survivor?
Designated Survivor.
Mm-hmm. So it's basically executive orders. The whole government gets killed except for the vice president.
Well, he was like Secretary of blank.
He was the HUD.
Yeah, he was the HUD secretary. There you go. Which is kind of the way they do it in every post-apocalyptic thing. Like in Battlestar Galactica, she was like the Secretary of Education.
Yeah.
Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Welcome back to the Joel Schumacher Designated Survivor Hour.
Right.
Which Designated Survivor will take over to this week's Joel Schumacher movie?
My hope was George Clooney.
Oh, there you go.
He'd be a good one. I mean, Flatliners is also an episode.
I've never seen it, so.
It's weird. Bunch of doctors try to kill themselves and then bring themselves back. It's like, how close can you get to the great beyond and then come back?
And something comes back with them.
So it's kind of like From Beyond?
Kind of, sort of, but it's science. They remade it like 5 years ago.
Yeah.
No, I'll check it out at some point.
It's an episode. The original is. I haven't seen the remake. And then Star has with her a little boy called Laddie.
Yes.
Wearing
now, was that her actual son or just some random kid?
I think he was some random kid they'd collected.
Well, that had drank the booze. He had not been bitten by the vampire, right? Because he was not a vampire or something.
Same as her, basically.
He did have the eyes and fangs because the two vampire comic nerds want to kill him, and she tries to stop them, and then he does his hissy fang thing.
That was the case with her as well as with Jason Patrick. They hadn't done their first kill yet.
Right, and neither of them had been bitten. So the rules of this vampire is stupid. You can be out in the sunlight, just like the Twilight vampires.
Only if you haven't done your first kill, which, why would you do that then?
Right. Second, they are not averse to garlic. If you wear sunglasses, you're fine.
Although they are averse to holy water, which I would think garlic would make more sense than holy water.
Dude, man, this is Catholic guilt all the way through. I mean, it's the same thing with The Exorcist. You have to understand that the Catholic understanding of everything is right. Otherwise, the movie doesn't work. And so in this case, you have to understand that holy water is their weakness. Fine, whatever. I just think that you avoid Italians if you're a vampire. Maybe that's
it. Yeah, maybe.
But then we have, what else? I guess you can if you drink another vampire's blood, that's the way you get on the path to becoming a vampire.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't become fully a vampire until you commit your first kill and suck someone's blood.
Yes. It's kind of like before then, you're changing and growing up and coming into your own terms, but you're still not really a vampire. You're sort of a virgin vampire.
But you're not sure if Kiefer Sutherland's attractive or not.
Yeah, and you're just not sure if you should really give up and kill that easy. Yeah.
But in the meantime, you get photosensitive, you sleep a lot, you at one point float out a window.
To be fair, I think he's supposed to be a high schooler, because his mom keeps saying that when school goes back, he'll have to go back to, like, he'll be back into a routine or something.
It was the 1980s. I mean, all high schoolers looked like they were 30.
Yeah, he was living a hard 1985 or whatever that was. But, like, if that's the case, though, I totally would sleep into 2 in the afternoon on a summer day.
I mean, you don't even need to be a vampire at that age to do that. That's just sort of what happens.
Hanging out on the boardwalk wearing sunglasses and leather jacket. Yeah, no, I get it. I apparently was a greaser or a vampire.
Keeping those sunglasses on at night so you can keep track of visions in your dreams.
Or another in this case, greaser vampires.
They weren't really greasers. What they essentially were the Beavis and Butthead's dads that they met in Do America, where they used to be roadies for Motley Crue. And they were just trying to keep up with the glory days. But, you know, and it's all about to come to an end for them.
The last group we have to talk about is that, I guess there's two. At one far end of this boardwalk, whatever, is a comic book store headed by Edgar and Alan, the Frog Brothers.
Ugh. One of whom is, I think, Corey Feldman's Edgar.
Yes, that's right. And then someone named Jameson Newlander, who apparently only ever played this character. He's also in The Blob, and he's in the Lost Boys 2010 movie.
What was the character's name in The Blob?
Anthony, which is just the year before this.
I'm trying to think. It must have been one of those two kids, either the brother of the younger brother, the protagonist, or the one that gets dissolved by the blob in the sewer? I'm kind of hoping it's the latter.
The 2010 movie is called The Lost Boys, The Thirst, 2010. And not only does Edgar come back, Jameson Newlander come back, who is Alan, but Feld Dog is back, oh, too.
Of course he's back.
They
offered him a sandwich. He had to say yes.
All right. I might have to see that.
There's two direct-to-video sequels and a comic series.
Speaking of comic series, I mean, this boardwalk has everything, first and foremost. I mean, this boardwalk has, besides a carnival, it's got a video store, it's got a comic book store, all separate because it was the 80s.
Right.
Basically, it's like if you stuck little Five Points in the middle of a beach somewhere. That was this boardwalk.
Like the fish market in Seattle, like a big row of stores all along the beach.
I'm having fun here. The 2008 one, and I'll stop, is called The Tribe, Lost Boys The Tribe. And Corey Feldman is back as well. He's listed fifth. Kiefer Sutherland's brother, Angus Sutherland, is in it as well. And he is above Corey Feldman.
In one of the direct-to-video knockoffs, I think they have a whole plot making fun of Twilight.
I mean, it's 2008 and 2010. It's easy enough. The plot synopsis is written from someone in Brazil, so...
It kind of makes sense, though, that they'd start making fun of other things, because a lot of later stuff stole from this, like Michael and Kiefer Sutherland's character, David, are clearly supposed to be Angel and Spike, right?
Yeah.
Am I the only one who got that?
No, 100%. I do dig the kind of kids figuring stuff out. I mean, again, we're doing Goonies soon. Like, this is the beginning of the precocious kid movie era, mm-hmm. and you can't go to the cops with this. The cops aren't going to believe us, so we've got to fix these vampires ourselves.
You know what? Who does it? What movie does it better?
Anything?
But
Home Alone?
The one I'm thinking of in particular is Fright Night, the original one.
Yeah, Fright Night's good.
Which is, for those of you who've never seen it, it's about these kids who hire this old-timey... midnight movie horror host, Roddy McDowall. So, you know, it's good. It's got Roddy McDowall.
Of course.
And they hire him to help kill somebody that they think actually is a vampire.
Did you ever see the remake?
I've heard of it because I know David Tennant was the Roddy McDowall character.
And I think, it's not Brad Pitt. It's Colin Farrell.
Yeah, that's right.
Is the vampire. And that the movie, the remake actually looked pretty good, but it was in and out of theaters in like 3 weeks.
It got pretty good reviews. Well, I've at least heard good things about it, but I don't know. Like, until recently, where horror has suddenly gotten kind of a big leg up, it seemed like horror movies were just kind of flops in the theater for a little bit.
Up from like the, feels like the late 2000s to the mid to 2010s, kind of.
Well, and then especially ones with big budgets.
Oh, yeah.
But now, of course, again, we mentioned Peele, but they've brought back between A Quiet Place and Us and the Get Out. We have some pretty movies that are like Academy Award worthy.
And Midsommar was Midsommar one of the best films the last year.
Get Out actually had something to say. It was thoughtful. And A Quiet Place was just creepy as hell. I'll give it that.
Well, I mean, The Lost Boys thought it had something to say. But here's the thing. When I first saw this, because I was convinced we'd done an episode on this before, and I was pretty sure this was the point I was making. It's like they're trying to mash two different movies together. They're trying to mash the Michael movie, which is the more adult movie that where vampirism is a symbol of sexuality and puberty and stuff. Which, okay, that's not necessarily original, but that does kind of make sense. And then you've got the Corey's movie, where it's just all precocious, and it includes a lot of pratfalls that don't really fit in with the tone of the scenes with David and Michael and the gang and them just going out and terrorizing the locals. It's just such a weird movie because it's trying to be both of those things and it doesn't succeed really at being either.
Well, sometimes there's one scene of the pratfall and the gruesome has come together nicely. They, at one point, shove a vampire into a tub full of holy water and garlic and boil it alive.
That would have been fine in a separate thing, but to me, the one thing that worked, I had it for a second, now I'm forgetting it. Actually, maybe nothing in this movie worked. Well, the biggest waste was that scene where Diane Wiest is bringing back her new manager boyfriend, because this
Max.
Is the 80s.
Yeah.
You could do that. And they're trying to prove he's a vampire by like feeding him a shitload of garlic and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, that belonged in a different movie.
It's a look who's coming to dinner.
Yeah.
Yeah, this movie is kind of eclectic. Look who's
the
coming to dinner.
Remake
a vampire.
Of, look who's coming to dinner.
Another white guy, but this one is a vampire.
Spoiler alert.
Oh, this is a 32-year-old movie at this point.
You said spoiler alert in the first 5 minutes about their castle basement thing.
Yeah.
Their sunken hotel cave.
Which, by the way, it turns out that the head vampire, actual spoiler alert, isn't David. It is, in fact, Marge Simpson, because she does have a life outside the home.
Yeah, having seen this movie, now I know what some of the jokes in the episode were.
Yeah. No, it's Max, the new boyfriend, whom they actually give so many hints, it's barely even a spoiler.
Yeah, no, you could tell pretty early on.
Well, the thing that clinched it was when he's arriving for the date, and he says something like, well, as the man of the house, I can't come in unless the man of the house invites me. And I was like, oh, God.
You're a vampire.
Yeah.
Game over. When I saw this
for the
Cineprov show, I was like, oh, he's a vampire. You got to invite a vampire into your house. It's stupid. It's really on the nose.
Yeah.
True Blood had a whole joke on that in one of the episodes. It was actually funny.
Buffy had a... had a really scary scene around that in season 2, and it was actually pretty terrifying, where Angel manages to get into the school.
I love Matt. Matt, that was like, that reminded me of a joke. The joke was funny. Like wistfully thinking about a joke that none of us know what you're talking about.
It's an Andy Kaufman bit.
It is an Andy Kaufman bit.
This vampire is killing another character, and the vampire who made her is like, could someone please let me in so I could put a stop to this?
That's a joke. Anyway, so... this movie is very straightforward. Michael is mildly seduced by Kiefer Sutherland. They have this weird scene where they're eating Chinese food, but it keeps turning into bugs and stuff.
Yeah, I was wondering if he was like telepathically making him hallucinate or something.
Yeah, David was making him hallucinate.
You got it.
Which is, I think, how they imply in this movie vampires turn into animals. They're making them hallucinate.
But he can clearly fly because they've torn the roof off of a building.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. We see so many flying POV shots, we never see them fly.
Right, exactly.
Which I get what they're going for, called the Lost Boys. This is a whole Peter Pan thing.
Right.
But not even like on a harness at any point, even an El Cheapo harness, not once.
Except Michael. Michael floats to the ceiling. He flies around the outside of his house. I mean,
Lost Boys, which Michael are we talking about at this point?
I hate you.
That had to come up.
He's just flopping around. These aren't like World War II dive bombers here.
No, I mean, it's literally a... It's a bad comedy bit. He gets stuck to the ceiling and then accidentally floats out the window.
Yeah, it's like that Mary Poppins scene.
And it's so weird because there was that pretty good scene earlier where they're all hanging out under the bridge and like gripping on as a train comes by, which it's like, okay, 80s punks, that kind of makes sense. And then the vamps start letting go and Michael's afraid to let go.
Right.
That was actually a fairly good scene and also explained that ability of them to fly.
Right, and it's not a we're afraid to die, it's a come on, join us, Michael.
Right.
Again, it's that illusory sexual thing, but it works very, very well because Michael is afraid because it's his first time doing anything like this.
Mm-hmm.
Subtle. But, regardless, it's not explained, we don't see them fly, and Michael wakes up back in bed, which should be a mystery. Never happens again, never comes close to happening again.
That in a much better movie, that would have meant something.
It would have. And then the second time around, the only thing we get is that they can create hallucinations, right? Where the motorcycles are driving around the house, but they open the door and they're gone.
Ooh.
But we don't know the extent of their power. Does Michael need to be near David to happen? Or is this, again, a fantasy that he wants them to be there?
Well, all we know at the end is that stakes to the heart definitely work.
Well, in reference to the comedy show last night, sorry for those of you who weren't there, Larry kept pointing out the fact that the line, what's going on, must have been uttered 75 times. No one, like, the director didn't know what was happening. I don't know who edited this movie.
Somebody who was a Marvin Gaye fan?
Yeah, and it's cut to ribbons. Rails are blown everywhere. This is also a Dick Donner movie. So
he was one of the producers.
So it is a sweaty, cocaine-fueled nightmare for a lot of it. And again, there's music video entire scenes. It's weird.
Now, we've mentioned music videos a couple times. What did you guys actually think of the soundtrack? We've kind of touched on it. Was it good?
I like this. The song they're playing at the beach, you have the sweaty sax guy playing. That song was actually pretty good.
Okay.
But I don't. The rest of the soundtrack, I don't really remember very well.
Echo and there were two covers of People Are Strange, which I think Nick mentioned earlier.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
And then there was Echo the Bunnyman's. Didn't we also do Light My Fire? Is that was just a joke I made? I don't remember.
I think that was just a joke.
Yeah. And then there's the Thou Shall Not Kill song, which name I forget is. It was good.
That I actually looked up, and that's the only... That was like a demo that guy had done, but I think that was like the only thing he'd ever did.
And I don't think it was ever released, really.
It's on the soundtrack, but that was about it.
Yeah. I'd say the soundtrack's pretty good.
It's fine.
It makes this like almost a period piece because it cannot exist anywhere else other than the late 80s. That's fine. I'm okay with making a movie set somewhere. It is very clearly set now. It's not a... This could be anywhere at any time. No, it's 1987. Cocaine was fine and New Coke was around.
and so much long hair on men.
Well, and speaking of, the Goonies poster is literally in Max's video shop.
Oh, there you go.
Which is, I guess, a doff to the cap to Corey.
And Richard Donner, because he directed it.
A Dick Donner piece. Very good. There was another movie in there. I like the adult section, which is just a shelf.
It's right next there. To new releases, I think.
Oh, which is good.
I couldn't see anything that was on the shelf, but I have to think that Joel Schumacher would have insisted that be fully stocked.
It was. There was nary a video checked out of that section. But I guess we should get into Edgar and Alan.
Oh, boy.
Their parents, I guess John Lennon and Yoko Ono, are passed
out. They're
dead.
They are legally deceased throughout this entire movie.
They weakened at Bernie's this whole thing. The parents are like washed out old hippie types, and they don't move from the couch.
There's a TV set on next to them. I forget what it was playing. I think it was some old monster movie, and that was meant to be the joke.
Yeah.
Was it Creature from the Black Lagoon?
At one point it was. I think it changes the different scenes.
But yeah, they're just sitting there. They have no lines. It wouldn't surprise me if those were mannequins.
Their parents were even in the movie?
Yes. Several times.
No, I didn't remember them at all.
The John Lennon, Yoko Ono types that were passed out in the comic shop.
Yeah, they're the ones who are like unconscious on the couch. And then Edgar, who's Corey.
Going back real quick, what if that actually was John Lennon and Yoko Ono in 1987?
Well, he was dead.
I know.
There you go. He'd been dead a long time, though.
Movie magic.
There you go.
Embalming fluid.
There you go.
So Corey dressed up like, I don't know, Rambo, I guess. And then Alan, dressed up like a Nam vet, are trying to put in Corey, further Corey, Hand, a
Corey Hand,
yeah, Corey Ham, Haim Hand,
Ham,
Haim, Corey Hand. Haim.
Okay, there we go.
Put into Corey's hand, a vampire comic to say, "Hey man, this is what's going on here," and Corey, who's wearing the worst outfits in every scene of this movie,
oh yeah,
says, "I'm not into horror comics," and then he's like, "You'll be into this one," and then again they nearly kiss because every man tucks 3 inches from the other's face.
What was that bit about, if you ever run into trouble, call the number on the back of that? What are they talking about?
They somehow must have their own number on the back of the comic book.
Yes. Corey slips his number to Corey so that they can be called in case of Corey-based Corey shenanigans.
Is the number right next to those x-ray specs that let you see those women naked?
That's right. They were the original Olsen twins, you see?
Ah.
Yeah. And then they both discovered cocaine.
So the original Olsen twins.
There you go. None of them are showing up in a Marvel movie. There's not some lesser Feldman that is in the Marvel movie system.
Totally off topic, but do you remember The Onion back in the day where there was that article like LAPD discovers deformed Olsen triplet?
I do. And what's her name? Olsen is fine. Scarlet Witch?
Ashley Olsen?
Ashley Olsen is fine. Yeah, she's fine.
And Marvel moved her show up to this year.
All right.
Yeah, the Wanda and Vision or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm sick of, among many, many things? People are like, her costume doesn't look right. Here's BuzzFeed's 12 points of view as to how the Marvel characters should have looked. Who could possibly be bothered?
They were never meant to look realistic.
Once we stub some beach balls into her chest, she'll look almost like Scarlet Witch does.
Okay, so we're going to take 18 inches off her waist. We're going to make her legs 6 inches longer. Her boobs are going to be,
they're
going to
balloon, yeah. And we're going to remove 6 of her ribs. So there we go.
And give her a strange-looking hat.
Yeah.
And the hat.
And the hat. The hat is the first thing to go. Anyway, regardless, I hate that crap.
I mean, the Frog Brothers, though, they were just such weird characters. And like I said, they're already what killed the movie for me was... those little hijinks that they kept up with, because there was no context behind them, like how they knew about vampirism and knew all this stuff.
See, what would have been significantly more interesting, for me at least, if you flipped the roles around and Edward Herman's character was like a Van Helsing type who knew all about vampires and he was trying to help Corey, and these two little pissants were the ones who were trying to like lure him away to make him a vampire.
Or like,
get rid of Michael altogether. Who cares?
Combine the characters. Make Grandpa the Van Helsing character.
That would have been better.
Well, some people, I was doing some checking on the websites, which I frequent that you guys like to make fun of me for, and some people were theorizing that he had known the entire time.
4chan.
Grandpa? Yeah,
that
grandpa.
Grandpa does know it the entire time.
Yeah,
he says at the end.
Yeah, that's
the one thing I hate about this town are the vampires. He knew the whole time. This isn't speculation.
We know you love going to 4chan and reading all these fan theories, Matt,
and then
well
8chan,
as
and then 12chan.
As you know, sticking it to all them libtard cucks, Matt.
But. Right.
Sorry, I'll leave that to you.
Be still my heart.
Hey now.
Yeah, the sites I'm referring to are TV Tropes and Wikipedia.
Yeah.
Yes. In case I missed something.
You don't have to defend yourself.
I've edited TV Tropes before. Oh, it happens.
I have not been to that website. I refuse.
Join us.
I would rather watch the movie we're talking about.
Yeah, well, in the case of Lost Boys, that might be a mistake.
I did. I watched it twice. I watched it three times.
Oh, wow.
What a lost lifetime I've spent. Although I guess the first time I watched it was like, God, 15 years ago.
Someone
recommended it to me and I thought it was like a smart movie. And then I watched it and I'm like, oh, I must have been thinking of something else.
Oh, for a while, I remember after a couple years after Batman and Robin came out, it's like, no. He could actually have done dark stuff. I mean, check out Lost Boys. That's all dark and moody. And I'm like, no.
It's not. The last scene of this, Michael is turning into a vampire. They realize they need to kill the head vampire, otherwise Michael will fully turn because he doesn't want to kill people. There is a scene where they kill a bunch of like people listening to AC/DC on the beach.
Well, there's the scene before that where the Frog Brothers and everybody goes to the little Jim Morrison cave lair where all the vampires are currently sleeping. And they kill, I think, the other girl.
They kill Alex Winter. They kill Marco.
I thought Marco is at the siege at the end. Oh,
it's Marco. I remember one of them yelling, "You killed Marco."
I stand corrected.
Yeah,
it wasn't.
You do. Yeah,
Bill
you
S. Preston, unfortunately, was staked.
Three words he says his entire movie?
Yeah,
he's on screen for an hour and he says three words.
Yeah, they spike Marco, they rescue Star and Laddie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then they have a line that's kind of funny. "I'm not rolling any vampire, then get left behind." Okay.
And then, after that, the remaining three swear vengeance, and they show up at Grandpa's house that night while Diane Wiest and Grandpa, I guess, is stuffing Widow Johnson.
Diane Wiest is on a date
with
Max.
So it turns ever so briefly into Straw Dogs.
Or Skyfall.
Or Assault in Precinct 13. The original one, not the remake.
Yeah, where they've set some traps, including garlic and holy water in a bathtub, mm-hmm. like Matt's mentioned a couple times. Bow and arrow practice.
Yep.
And
bow and arrow in an 80s stereo. I've seen that model before.
Death
by stereo. Yeah, I mean, we have a fight scene.
Well, there's an end fight scene between David and Michael, which, again, that's really the only thing that works now. I mean, the other two... One gets dissolved, the other one gets shot and electrocuted, and then David actually gets stuck onto those deer antlers.
Chekhov's taxidermy.
Yeah, there you go. See, this is Joel Schumacher was smart. He knew what he needed to call back to.
I mean, you know what would have been even better, kind of, if it was more like They Live and you didn't know who was a vampire, but instead we've established who the four vampires are and who the two people they're trying to convert. Or I guess three people, because Laddie is also kind of halfway there. And then there's just one mystery.
Well, they also want to convert Haim and Diane Wiest.
Well, yes, but that's only brought up in the very end.
Yeah,
right?
the head vampire wants Diane Wiest to be kind of his vampire
queen
and
yeah.
help him manage his lost boys who need discipline.
Right.
All the people, you want to be disciplinarian, it's not her.
Well, I mean, to be fair, Matt, she's the only other woman in this movie. So she's the only option. Joel Schumacher doesn't feel comfortable around women. If there was any mystery, but he's the only other man who's been introduced. He's the only other character. Of course, like you said, it's obvious that it's Edward Herman.
Yeah.
They kill David by slamming him into some antlers, and whatever her name is, Star, looks at David or at Michael and goes, "I don't feel any different." Mm-hmm. And he's still like vamping out or whatever.
The red eyes and the fangs.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's just, it's a lot. It's a lot of nothing.
And then they managed to kill Edward Herman.
Grandpa runs the car through the wall.
Oh, right, and that giant wood stake.
Goes through him, hits him in the fireplace, the house shakes apart, and Grandpa goes, "The only thing I hate about this town is, oh, the vampires. And I've stuffed all the old widows." Sometimes run out of widows. Actually, you realize, he is setting up people to die. So there's more widows in town for him to sleep with?
Now there's a movie right
there's
there.
There's your movie. But yeah. God, what would it be called?
The Renfield the Player. He sets up people to be killed by vampires so you can get their women.
Date with a vampire.
And then, of course, the tagline could be, "Death stalks you at every turn." Ah, there it is.
No. Being a widow sucks.
Okay. Yep. You win.
All right.
Control saved. Nailed it.
Hey, we're bringing it back. Let's go around the horn. So if it keeps up, would you recommend it, etc. Sudsy.
I can recommend at most half of it, and that's the scenes with Michael and Dave and that whole bit. But here's the other thing that I mentioned a couple times to these guys. Another movie came out the same year called Near Dark. It's got pretty much the same plot. It's got the same dynamics. It's much more skillfully shot. It's got a better cast, including half the cast of Aliens. Check that one out instead if you really want to get into this. I mean, ultimately, at the end of the day, this is a two Corys movie, and that's what brings it down, because then it turns from something that's supposed to be dark and moody into this stupid little precocious kid slapstick movie, and it just doesn't work.
Definitely see it if you can get an Atlanta comedy troupe to make comments on it, because that was funny.
Thank you.
And there's also some dialogue that's unintentionally hilarious, and there are a couple of cool bits, but I mean, you probably almost certainly can vacuum the house or something.
I'm going to disagree with both of you. This is a movie you kind of have to see. And now, don't take it seriously. Like, you know, get it with your funny friends, have a beer, watch this, because it's like nothing I've ever seen before. It's Joel Schumachery to the nth degree. It's silly. It's over the top. And the soundtrack, I think, is pretty good. I don't know if we nailed how weirdly campy it is either. If Batman had shown up like the Adam West Batman and punched someone, it would have fit, because nothing in this movie makes any sense. It's such a victim of its tragic time. Like you said, it works because it was a two Corys movie, and that's what ruins it. That's the only reason this was made. The woman who wrote it wrote one episode of The Golden Girls, and that's it. She's credited in three things, and two of them are the Lost Boys sequels for creating the characters. So God knows where he found this script. God knows anything about this. The Echo and the Bunny Man doesn't make sense. Nothing makes sense in this. It's kind of a seeing is believing, and it's less than 100 minutes.
Yeah, I'll give it props. It's short, nice and concise.
I do get one piece of amusement this movie.
Oh, amusement.
Imagining Andrew Lloyd Webber sitting down in the theater, watching this movie, and saying, yes, this is who I need to adapt my most popular musical.
Well, that's what it is.
That's literally something that happened, and I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall to see that.
The woman who wrote this has seven credits. One is an episode of Golden Girls, and three are these three movies. The other guy, James, who wrote it, that's it. He has three credits, and it's these three Lost Boys movies. He lived long enough to write all three of them. And then, of course, Dick Donners did a pile of cocaine and said, this is my movie! Like, I don't know how this came together, but my goodness gracious, it's something. Anyway, I think we're out of time, guys. So stay tuned. This month and this year, we have a whole bunch of crazy stuff coming out. Daniel, do you want to tease?
Well, I'm currently trying to find resources to do a second season of Disremembered. I'll keep everybody posted on that once we've got a topic and a schedule for that coming out. But hopefully that'll go well. And I'm planning on changing up a couple things in it. So stay tuned for that.
He's not here, but I will tell you, in April, the first episode of the second season of Mission Briefing is going to be on No Time to Die.
Oh, right.
And then we're going to go backwards through all the movies from the most recent one till Dr. No. But we're going to break up the seasons, doing all the Craig movies, doing a silly episode, and then switching between It, Disremembered, and a new show that I'm working on, tentative title, not complete, but it's going to be comedy based around my actual history passion. It's going to be produced by me and Steven Trunzo, a regular panelist, who will probably be back in the next couple weeks to do a movie with us.
By the way, some guy named Gareth R., I saw that name pop up in your phone. I guess he wanted to talk about the podcast, but I don't know. I hung up on him.
Yeah, it's for the best, because he will sue the pants off of us. But yeah, so stay tuned for our Hoffman on History, whatever we're going to call it. So this year we have three new shows, and if you are not yet following our Patreon, Here Be Tigers and Geekly Oddcast /Otterworlds and Myopia have joined together to form a Patreon that we're trying out. We'll see how it goes. And along with it, we're going to start a new movie series. Daniel, tell them what the movie series is.
The movie series is Alien.
Right. So for you who are just our regular listeners, in February, I will tell you we're going to do Alien versus Predator as a tease, because the Alien series is Patreon only. So if you want to hear what we'll talk about, kind of listen to us do AVP in February, But
and we're going to be doing all eight overall. So that includes the first four, the second AVP, and then the two most recent ones.
Yeah, and we might release the second AVP at the end to remind you how great our Patreon work is on the main feed. We'll see, but at least six of them will be behind the paywall. So with that in mind, of course, stay tuned next week, every future week, as you put a piece of your filmic past on the trial. Thanks, guys.
Why Have You Been Your Childhood is a product of Do Better Podcast. It is hosted by Nick Kaufman, produced by Nick Kaufman, Daniel Suttis, and Matthew Quinn, and edited by Daniel Suttis. Our theme song is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod from incomptech.com, licensed under Creative Commons License by Attribution 3.0 License.